You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Hey, you ready to rock the place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do, and Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from Hollywood, California, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 94. I am Andrew Wiebe. Not with Simon Borg, not with David Goss, a crew that I don't think we've ever had before. Nick Firshaw over here on the dials. It's a reprisal of an old role. And then the armchair analyst, Matt Doyle. It is on the night of MLS Cup, I guess the aftermath, so to speak. As you can tell, my voice is gone. That's the result of like three straight days yelling in crowded clubs over music. So
it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, just struggling, just trying to get it going. Of course,
well, you know what they say. There's nothing less glamorous than being a soccer writer.
I've heard that said as well. Landon Donovan with a very well placed jab right before he leaves. Hey guys, on the eve of my last availability here, sucks to be you. Pretty much that was Landon Donovan's message. But
thanks for showing up.
It's pretty good to be him right now. A 2-1 win for the LA Galaxy, their fifth MLS Cup championship, the first of five. Well, they got it done. Landon Donovan now has six. Right, I mean he's all alone at the top of the ladder among players. In MLS, he did not score in this one, not his best game. I think he would admit that as well. But a big show for you here on this, well, it's a Sunday. It'll probably be coming to you on a Monday. But as I said, we're going to wrap it up here in the first segment. We'll throw to David Goss and Simon Borg in the second and in the mailbag. They'll handle that business for you as we'll all be traveling back to our humble abodes. But let's get right into the game, guys. No goals in the first half. It wasn't a pretty game in a lot of ways. I think people were calling it cagey. That's a really kind word to use ultimately with this one. But Jesse Zardes scores the first ever goal for a homegrown in the 52nd minute, just a minute after Lee Wynn had a disputed penalty call. I wouldn't say much disputed because I don't think it was a penalty ultimately. Chris Tierney with a nice goal to tie matters in the 79th. And then we go to extra time, where the Revs pretty much just get their hearts broken every single MLS Cup. Robbie Keane, who else? The 111th minute, a defensive breakdown by the Revs, allowing him to get in behind. He puts it inside the back post. A little anticlimactic, but ultimately a victory for LA. They lift the cup. They enjoy the confetti shower.
It ended up, I think, how most people expect it to end it up with LA hoisting the trophy. Robbie Keane had two really great looks, maybe three really great looks, and one he put right into Shuttleworth's chest, and the other he took really selfishly instead of giving Landon Donovan the layup, and the third one he finally buried. And if you give a great player that many looks, eventually you're going to be picking the ball out of your own net.
Yeah, it wasn't the prettiest game for the Galaxy, I think. But you know what? This wasn't the prettiest postseason for these guys either. We talked about the Seattle series office.
They've had one good game in the past six, eight weeks.
For all that talk about the West being just heads and shoulder above, that was not the shining light of a postseason. The East, entertainment value-wise,
yeah. It was a lot better in the East. But for the Galaxy, and Bruce Arena said it after the game, to capitalize or to end this season with an MLS Cup title. They went through a lot this season. They went through the whole Landon Donovan saga, all the emotional stuff for A.J. De La Garza. This, I think, he didn't say it specifically or explicitly, but I think this is probably the proudest Bruce Arena's been of a team because they just got it, and especially with these last couple weeks when they didn't play well. They got by Seattle the skin of their teeth, and today, surprisingly, they definitely could have lost this game and they won.
Yep. You're right, and it's – like you brought up the Landon thing and like his retirement and A.J. De La Garza unfortunately losing his child, like these horrible tragedies, and there's a tendency I think on social media whenever somebody brings it up to say, oh, narratives, you're just peddling narratives.
It's this, like, was
no,
real, man.
These are real people. Like when a teammate, someone you've been playing with for years and years, loses a child and then still comes to work with you, like, I don't care what job you're in, that affects you. And you could see that. And the other thing is, look, Landon Donovan means a lot to a lot of people. And I'm not just saying for the Galaxy, but for U.S. soccer, Landon Donovan means a lot. And I think you saw that weight of emotion with the Galaxy, and I think it led to some pretty awful plays.
And Arena said this down the stretch, that the Donovan finale and the farewell tour was a distraction for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really thrilled when it was sort of over and they could just focus on the game. The one guy who is the least emotional person I think I've seen in a long, for an MLS sort of superhero, whatever, is Robbie Keane. And when it came to the 111th minute, Robbie Keane got it done.
A kind of funny note on Robbie Keane. We talked a lot on the show. Different sides of who would lift the cup, and everybody knew it was going to be Robbie Keane. Come on. He mm-hmm. has the armband. He's not going to mm-hmm. give up that honor. He gives it to his kid second, which I don't think any of us predicted. But look, but that's his prodigy, man. You got to give it to your boy. You got to. Look, end of the day, 25 years from now, he may not be in contact with Landon Donovan. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and bet he won't.
And you said it, Doyle. He didn't play terribly well. He missed a couple chances.
He was toilet.
He was not very good today. Neither was Landon Donovan. And the Galaxy admitted this was not their best game.
The list of players who were good, awfully short.
It was short on both sides. On both sides of the ball. But Keane, I think today, he gets the MLS Cup MVP. That's his first one. And obviously, he won the regular season MVP. He cemented his status today. If he's not the best designated player so far, probably by the end, he might win another cup here.
He's the most successful. There's no doubt about it that he's the most successful.
He's the most efficient. He's the most successful. And he's the – I mean, any team would take Robbie Keane over some of the other DPs we've had in this
game. We should talk about another guy on the other side of the field who is not a DP but who has played with like one all year, and we saw him downstairs in the hotel lobby is Lee Wynn.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking to see him have to come off with – his legs cramped. Like
It didn't just cramp. Both of his calves cramped. He came off.
Yeah.
He said, you know what? I got to be on the field. I got to come back. And then both his groins cramped. I have never cramped in my groin. I can't imagine having both of them seize up is a very kind thing. But he wasn't drinking water downstairs, which was a little surprising.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is the offseason. But it was really disappointing for him because he got the ball in that space. Not in space, not with Akers in front of him, but in that little pocket of space between the back line and the central midfield. A couple of times, and he just didn't quite have it. And it was kind of a disappointing ending to just a spectacular season mm-hmm. from him. And mm-hmm. I think, look, nobody's going to mean as much as what Landon Donovan has meant. But in terms of smaller, technical, creative players, just the season Lee Wynn has had, I think it's opened some eyes for some guys maybe would have been ignored in the past.
Yeah, no doubt. Maybe guys that are looking at this league saying, that's not a place where I can succeed even.
And right.
Especially on the domestic side, because we've seen it on, you know, the South Americans come here that have this skill set. They get in that spot. They get the opportunities. They get the long run. Not a lot of times does that happen for an American player. Interesting note from this game, the Revs actually won the possession battle. I think just about everybody who did previews on it, who discussed it, said they're not going to win that. They're going to sit back. L.A. is going to hold on to the ball. They're going to do what they normally do and stick together 10, 15, 20 pass sequences. Maybe one of those will turn out to be a goal. That's not the way this went down in this match. L.A., I think, had the better of the chances, no doubt about that. But if you're New England, you look at this match and you say, man, we had an opportunity.
Yeah.
And now that's five MLS Cup defeats. Jay Heaps, after this match, did not take kindly to questions about that storyline. Which, look, if I'm him, I don't either. But, you know, that is the storyline for the Revs at this point. They're always the bridesmaid, never the bride. They just don't get it done. I know the Buffalo Bills thing is kind of trite and it's lame, but, you know, it is the equivalency. It is what everybody's going to go back to. Was this a blow to the organization in that sense? Or, I mean, all the talk after was, we're building for next year. We've got 3 or 4 years with this project.
Yeah. Well, I think in the beginning of the season, as good as the Revs were last year, they lost in the Eastern Conference semis to Kansas City. I don't think anybody in the beginning of the season, a lot of people probably didn't expect them quite to get to the MLS Cup final and then go toe-to-toe
with the
Galaxy.
They were supposed to be good.
They're supposed to be good and probably threaten Kansas City, right? They did plenty more than that. As for the game itself in Heaps, I mean, he answered these questions in 06. That was the third time he'd lost, was in 06 when they lost the PK shootout to Houston. Then they lost again in 07, and now he's here as a head coach. So I'm not surprised he didn't answer
What's crazy, though, and you dropped this stat on me afterwards, all three of their defeats to the Galaxy
were
in extra time.
And they've lost five cups, you mentioned, Weebs. They've only lost one in regulation.
Yeah.
They lost the 07 one to Houston in regulation.
And that it went back and forth.
Right,
the
lost a shootout, and then they lost three others in extra time. So It's been a tough road for Revs fans, and they were really good at this game. They came out in numbers, and they were a lot better, in my opinion, than the Galaxy Porters, considering they didn't obviously have as many. In the game itself, you mentioned it. They had the chances to win. Lee Wynn had an opportunity that he thought was a PK. It was not. I don't think you could argue that it really was. And Teal Bunbury, after Tierney got the goal, which shocked everybody, but it was a wonderful goal. It was 1-1. Teal Bunbury hit the crossbar 6 inches down, and the Revs win this game. And we're not talking about Landon Donovan. We're talking about Jermaine Jones, and we're talking about all these guys. So they'll be back again next year. I think they are going into next season easily the favorites in the Eastern Conference, easily the best team.
Yeah, I mean, I actually put out a tweet. I said, we'll do this again next year, folks, and it's either going to be in Foxborough or Columbus. Foxborough or Columbus. I think those are the two teams because the rest of the East is going to be so down.
So bundle up. That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
no more
beautiful
LA stuff.
65 degree balmy weather
but
here.
Nothing to be ashamed of for the Revs, considering they withstood it in the first. I mean, Robbie Rogers almost scored in the second minute in this game, second or third minute.
Yeah,
and had
like
that gone in, game
was
over. Right?
Yeah.
They withstood that. A lot of guys did not play. We mentioned on both teams, but guys on the Revs had bad, uncharacteristically bad games. Some guys played well. Jermaine Jones and Lee Wynn, when he had his moments, played well. Charlie Davies didn't play today, I don't think. Bunbury was awful at times.
Yep.
Andrew Farrell did not have his best day.
Andrew Farrell was bad.
And Caldwell wasn't that great, I didn't think, either.
No,
they didn't play great. They didn't play terribly well. And they went toe-to-toe with
the
best team in MLS.
What they'll regret in this game are the individual plays, the two plays on the goals. And, you know, that's not like groundbreaking analysis. You always regret those plays. Yeah. But especially, I think, even more so than the first, the second will get them. But the first is all about, you know, Jesse Zardes just overpowering Andrew Farrell. There's no way he can fall to ground in that instance. And a good finish by Zardes, the first ever homegrown to score a goal in MLS Cup. So props for him. Down at the bar earlier, Doyle here saying he expects a regression. I think I'm with him on that, too. No Landon Donovan. That's going to change things. That'll be a big talking point throughout this whole offseason, maybe even in the next segment with Simon and Dave, because remember, there is a half-day trade window on Monday in MLS before the expansion list. So a lot of movement expected with that one, but it's the second goal, and take us through that a little bit, Doyle, because somehow, some way, in extra time, Robbie Keane is 1v1 with Bobby Shuttleworth, and that is pretty much the only thing that you can't let happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was – look, I hate to pick on Chris Tierney, who's been so good in these playoffs and was, I thought, really arguably the Revs' best player for most of this game. And
expected that touch, by the way, to just leave Leonardo just like staring at the ground? That's a beautiful touch.
It was amazing. It looked like he'd been doing it his entire life. And he's been, in a really weird way, the heart and soul of this Revs team, because as he became better and better and more confident going forward, they became so much more dangerous. Well, fullback's a tough position. You got to keep track of the guy behind you. You got to keep track of the center forward pulling off of the central defenders, and you got to keep track of the ball. And, oh, by the way, when you're going against a team as good as the Galaxy and a player as smart as Robbie Keane, you got to keep track of the guy 40 yards away from you, busting your offside trap. So poor Chris Tierney was coming over to cut off the long ball to Alan Gordon, but Marcelo Sarva saw it and sent it just a perfect ball to Robbie Keane instead. And it's like, it's just a high-level play. You know, it was a bad game, but it was one moment where two very, very smart, very experienced players just made the right play, and Tierney blew it. He blew it, and the game's unfair.
And it's tough because this is a guy who said, I'm a Revs fan first. He grew up with this team. He saw those failures before. The unfortunate truth is now he's a part of it. Jermaine Jones had a little something to say after this one. Here's the quote, and I'll kind of give it a little bit of context. It's his opinion that this is the type of goal that this team has given up an awful lot since he's been there. The ball over the top that just completely cuts them apart. Here's what he had to say. It was a goal we always give up. It's a normal long ball. Nothing special, and they're killing 4 to 3 people. I do like the 4 to 3 people. Always a joy to transcribe, Jermaine. They hit the ball long. The ball dropped in the back. King can run 1v1 with the keeper. It's not only today. It is always. The last games we were lucky that we can fix that. They did not fix it in this one, and they go down. So let's look ahead a little bit. You kind of mentioned it. New England expected to be the flag bearers in the East. Of course, Sporting KC and the Houston Dynamo moving on to the West. You have those expansion clubs in New York City FC and Orlando City coming in the East, but you'd be naive to think that they'll be able to turn it on from day one. New England is going to be the team, you have to imagine. They have a full year of Jermaine Jones. You'd think they're going to invest a little bit in the offseason. You'd hope. Give them a little bit more firepower. Where do they stand? What's the aftermath for them when they sit and reflect on this in the next 2 weeks or so?
Well, they'll go into 2015 as a Supporters Shield favorite. And Jermaine Jones, as frustrating a player as he can be, and you and I, you know, we stood next to each other during the game, and especially midway through the second half, every time Jones was on the ball, it was like hero ball.
Yeah. He gets a little bit desperate, it feels like.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem to trust guys the way he should. But at the same time, he's a game breaker. Yeah. If you have him for 34 games, you know you're going to get some great play out of him, and you know it's going to allow Lee Wynn to move up a little bit higher. And look, the Revs have got a lot of great pieces, and they are going to be favorites. I think Columbus has just as much upside heading into next year.
Let's get a center forward in here.
Yeah.
Berhalter.
Well, I mean, can Kai Kamara do it?
Yeah. That's about the noise that you make with him at center forward. Yeah, no doubt. LA on the other side, Landon Donovan's gone. And now what? That's your guy. And, you know, we're sitting downstairs, as everybody in MLS, I'm sure, has done today, kind of reflecting on this, talking about what might happen next. And the question was even posed, is this a playoff team next year in the West? Which I think is crazy talk. It's 100% a playoff team.
To be fair, I had already had three drinks.
Yes, that's very, very true. And now here we are. Look where we are. We trust the analysis of the armchair analyst. It's always on point. But I don't think there's any chance that doesn't happen. But do they have an opportunity to win their fourth and five? Because at this point, they are the standard. They are the standard for success in MLS.
I think they're built to certainly challenge again in the Western Conference. I think Seattle's built certainly. They might be built a little bit better.
They'll be thinking it's their year.
Yeah. If the Galaxy lose Landon, and if you're right that Zardes has sort of a slump next year and his numbers fall off, then Seattle's going to be in the driver's
seat
there.
But Marcelo Sarvas is going to be 97 years old next year. There's no way he could run like this again.
Players are Brazilian jeans. Brazilian jeans, man. You spend half your life on a beach and just toned and tan. You just run for days, man.
Obviously, all their guys are going to be a little bit older. But what's going to be interesting to see during the offseason is who the Galaxy get effectively to replace Landon Donovan.
Or do they do it now? Do they wait till perhaps the summer when the pool is a little bit
deeper?
The
word is, and it's not a surprise, but the word is around the Galaxy now, as five-time Cup champs, as you said in the beginning, with this reputation of success, they're going to go out and get a big player. Bruce Arena can build the rest of his team around Ishizaki and some of these role players, but they're going to go get a big player. I don't know if anybody's going to have the impact Landon Donovan did, but they're going to try and go get a big player. Robbie Keane's going to be good again next year. He's a machine, I think. I don't know if he's going to be as good as he was this year, but he's still going to put up solid, solid numbers. Omar's getting better every year, so to speak. De La Garza was great today. Yeah. He's getting better and better every year.
You have Robbie Rogers, a full season left back to kind of figure
that out.
Are you
a believer in Robbie Rogers' long-term potential at left back?
Yeah, I don't think there's another position for him. I think that's where he will be.
Yeah,
but this was his first year playing.
Yeah, we're looking at I'm not going to say he's just scratching the surface, because he's a guy who's been a long-term pro, realistically. Mm. But it does take some time to transition, and I think the more confident he gets, the better it'll be. And, like, you'd be kidding yourself to say that even at this point, he's not top five left back in the
West.
Right. Yeah.
So
they're going to be good next year. But you mentioned Kansas City, Houston come over, so the West gets a little bit more interesting. And Dom Kinnear's at San Jose, and who knows what's going
to
happen there.
Yeah. They'll at least be hard to beat.
Yeah, MLS is you can have a turn. Look at Ben Olsen and DC United. You can turn things around pretty quickly. So Seattle is the top team. I think Dallas is going to be good. I think Vancouver is kind of curious. And Portland barely missed the playoffs this year. So, and I don't know what's going to happen with Real Salt Lake, quite honestly.
Just wait till this second segment, because we're doing this on Sunday night. And the word on the street is that things are rolling downhill, and that half trade window is going to get real, real interesting. All right, before we get out of here, guys, you know, we've talked about the game itself. What about the year itself? Because that's kind of the thing that, you know, you sit down after this and you start to just, you know, take a breath and think, boy, I'm going to get some good sleep over the next 2 or 3 weeks, God willing. What about the 2014 season? What did we take away from this? What is our end of the day? How do we view 2014 MLS?
Well, we'll do our, you know, stories of the year that we always do on MLSsoccer.com, and we haven't voted on it yet or anything like that, but this was the year of Landon. This was end to end, really. Yeah. I mean, if you consider everything that happened with the national team, the goal scoring record, the surge in the second half of the season that effectively got him the assist record that nobody expected.
Right.
Then he was pretty good in the playoffs. You had the farewell tour, and obviously goes out with MLS Cup. It was the year of Landon, and then 2015 is out of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and maybe expansion.
Yeah, well, expansion was a big story. I was talking with a friend downstairs about it. Like, this felt like the last year for us, the soccer nerds. It's our underground little
band. It's
going to
get bigger and bigger.
It's going to get bigger and bigger. And Landon was the face of that, the face of American soccer.
Maybe it's
coming
fitting.
Up before it was. I mean, you see all those highlights of when he was 19, 20, 21 years old. It's on great. It's like Zapruder film, you know. And that was his career. So it feels like it's just going to get bigger and bigger. Maybe a little less personal. And I'm not looking forward to that part of it. I do like these are the good old days. Yeah. People are going to talk about the good old days. These were them.
You know, my favorite thing actually about these events is not necessarily the games or the parties or any of that stuff. It's a mutual gathering place for all these people that, you know, whose lives revolve around this, whose lives revolve around soccer in the United States. And you go around and you meet people and you're like, all right. You know, there are times I think like, you know, when I lived in Kansas where I was like, nobody else likes this.
Yeah.
Very few people do. And if they do, I don't know them and I'm not hanging out with them. And then you come to something like this and you're like, okay, there's groundswell.
Maybe a little too deeply about it. I mean, deep enough to get a banner on a plane flying around.
Yeah.
I think Doyle, you got a good point. Like Donovan's retirement sort of dovetails with the introduction of NYCFC next year and Orlando City and Atlanta in 2 years and the new LAFC franchise in a couple of years. It's going to get bigger. It might get better. But it's going to get bigger. It's going to get a little bit more corporate going forward. That's just the way it is. Yep. Once you bring people in with money and expectations, it's going to be which team can buy the biggest players, which it hasn't really been. It sort of was in 07 a little bit, but not really. Because only two or three teams could play. Right now, everybody's looking to get something, and now it's an arms race between Toronto and Seattle and L.A. and NYCFC and maybe the Red Bulls.
You know, and it is exciting because it's what we want. We want to be one of the best teams in the world, and you do that by investing money to buy the best players and to build the best players, and that's the legacy. But I think we're all going to miss a little bit.
Yep, I agree.
The time where you could go down to your local In-N-Out Burger and you know have fries with an MLS player, and they're just nobody would
we'll
notice
see.
Them.
Yeah, those are rare times. Maybe they'll get more and more rare as the year goes on. An exciting MLS Cup, maybe not the quality on the field that we all hoped for, but in the end, a storybook ending. I was told not to use Hollywood ending. That's the only time I will reference it right there. But, there you go. South Bay ending for Landon Donovan and the Galaxy. 2-1 winners in MLS Cup, the 19th of all time. We head into MLS next year. Check out the beta of MLS Next, the new website at MLSsoccer.com. There is a corporate spiel for you.
Fershaw is literally
right there.
Literally yawning.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's fair enough. Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back, it won't be us. It'll be Simon and the Gas Man. Enjoy.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Omar Gonzalez, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Imagine there's no heaven. All right, welcome back here. And like Andrew said in the first segment, David Goss here in New York City. Andrew, flying over your heads right now, returning home, and I'm here with Simon Borg. Simon, how did you enjoy LA?
It was good. I mean, it's when you're leaving New York at this time of year, the weather was good. The stadium atmosphere was fantastic. I think the LA crowd just keeps getting better and better. I think they respond to the big events, and the traveling Revs fans were pretty vocal as well. I thought the game, despite not being as great a game as we'd want it to be, the tension, and I guess you had to be in the stadium to really feel it, the tension really made it engaging still all the same. I don't know if you got that sense at home, David.
And I think a lot of people maybe were a little upset with the quality, but I thought there were chances, and to go to the tension thing, I think that makes it exciting, is just having goal-scoring chances and having the fans on edge, you know, most of the game.
Look, I was disappointed that the Revs weren't more daring. They didn't throw enough numbers forward. They kind of picked and chose their moments. They still had their chances, but I think Jermaine Jones sitting as back as he did, as far back as he did, it really took something. I didn't recognize that Revs team. And yeah, they're in a one-off final, so maybe you got to play a little bit differently. But you know, I was a little bit underwhelmed by the Revs from that perspective. Although you got to appreciate their fight and their ability to come back, and credit Chris Tierney with making a run that I think no one really saw coming toward the end of the game there, when he'd been working so hard all throughout that game.
And one of the things the guys mentioned in the first segment, you just heard them out in LA after the game, was building and talking about next year and how the league's going to change and how teams are going to change. And here on Monday, December 8th, we saw a lot of moves happen, a lot of energy right in the morning, a lot of teams making moves, trades left and right, and then ending the day with the teams releasing the protected list for the expansion draft that will occur on December 10th. On Wednesday for NYCFC and Orlando City, and it got started off early by one of those expansion teams, Orlando City, picking up three players in trades and three really MLS starters, potential MLS All-Stars in Amobi Okugo, Aurelien Collin, and Tally Hall. Hall had been rumored earlier, and those are three huge moves, Simon, for a team right before the expansion draft to already be building their spine.
Yeah, we already knew about the Hall one, but then when you throw in Kalen and Okugo, that's exactly what it is. It's you're building your spine. Okugo, we know how flexible he is in terms of positioning. He's a good midfielder to have to start. I believe that as praised as he was as a center back, I've enjoyed him more in midfield. I know not every game he's not been as consistent in midfield as maybe we've seen him at center back. But I still think there's if he's purely a defensive midfielder, I think he can really cover a lot of ground and be a force in midfield, especially if now you're giving him as an expansion team, you're saying, hey, we want you to really own this midfield and be defensive, because you have a guy like Kaká on that team. And Kalen, I enjoy this guy. I'm glad he's staying in the league. For a moment there, I thought that, you know, the falling out with Kansas City meant maybe that he wasn't going to be in MLS anymore, and I had a chat with him and looked like maybe European options were beginning to surface. So it's great that a character like that stays in the league.
And we know Okugo had been talking about European options as well, and going to Orlando, clearly he had the conversation where he thinks he's a center midfielder, and he now has the assurance that he's going to get the opportunity to play there for Orlando, which is what he was really looking for. And I think he's the perfect player to play behind a guy like Kaká, because he's going to cover that ground and he's going to do the work defensively. And we know Adrian Heath likes that 4-2-3-1 formation. I think he slots in perfectly in those two center midfield roles.
Yeah, I think Okugo, there have been times where I feel like he's trying to do too much. He's trying to be the playmaker. He's trying to be the guy making the runs out of midfield. He's trying to, you know, be a defensive midfielder. And I think if he just has one duty and one thing to do, I think he can be really, really good at that. He's so fundamentally sound. He's good technically. Awareness-wise, he needs to maybe, you know, continue to get better there, just to know where he is and reduce the mistakes and the turnovers. But I think, look, another year of experience for him, and I think they're getting a player who's just reaching his prime.
And a player a lot of people think may have a U.S. national team future. And also another report coming out from the Orlando Sentinel today, on Monday, that Honduran forward Brian Roches has signed a contract pending a physical with Orlando, a 19-year-old striker. He scored a lot of goals for Real España, including in CCL, and has 6 appearances for the Honduran national team at only 19. So a special, exciting attacking player that could be coming down the line for Orlando. That would make it 13 players. They currently have 12 on their roster, but the other expansion team making a couple trades before they get a chance, a crack at the expansion list, and they made a trade with Vancouver for Omar Salgado, former number one pick in MLS, and a player that, even though he hasn't performed in the last 4 years, Simon, we're constantly talking about in U.S. soccer circles.
Right, but don't read too much into the Omar Salgado thing, because there is a transfer already worked out that both New York City FC and Vancouver are going to partake in. It was sort of a situation where Vancouver wished they could have done the transfer on their own, but because the league has rules where non-expansion teams can't make transfers before this expansion draft, then they felt like they needed to really come to an agreement with one of the expansion teams, in this case New York City FC, to be able to preserve that transfer that they have lined up that they have not disclosed because of pending personal terms that need to be agreed upon. So this is not Omar Salgado coming to New York City FC and being a player for New York City FC. So let's not get that mixed up.
And a chance for NYCFC maybe to get some extra allocation money. They have a lot of players. These two teams have to fill a lot of roster space. Also making a move to get Josh Williams from the Columbus Crew SC for allocation money as well. So now they have Jeb Borofsky and Josh Williams going into this trade. And a lot of trades going on around the league between already established teams. One of the biggest ones, the Portland Timbers pick up Nat Borchers in a trade from Real Salt Lake. Simon, he's an experienced defender. They already have Liam Ridgewell there. They've made a couple moves at fullback today in trading away Michael Harrington, picking up the option of Alvis Powell, who was on loan from Jamaica this year, and starting to come together that back line that was so shaky for the Timbers throughout this season.
But look, let's remember, Nat Borchers played in behind Kyle Beckerman and in front of Nick Raimondo. And I think that Nat Borchers, he's obviously very experienced. He's smart. Positioning is great. His ability to anticipate is great. But I believe what you saw out of Portland from a defensive standpoint, the misgivings they've had, is they allow too many one-on-one situations. The central midfield of Will Johnson and Diego Chara wasn't as effective as it was in years past. So you had a lot of situations where attackers were going at defenders one-on-one. And you know what? If attackers go one-on-one against Nat Borchers, it's going to be a lot of the same things that you saw last year. So I think it's, based on what I've seen with my eyes, and obviously Caleb Porter has data and statistics and he knows the team better, but based on what I've seen with my eyes, it's been the fact that there's not been good enough team defending, and that's what's exposed them. Nat Borchers is a smarter, less instinctive defender. So he's going to be more settled in that position than just reacting to stuff, which a guy like Pa Motuka, maybe you can look at him and say that's his game. But because of his physicality, I think Pa Motuka, we're going to get to this, but he's one of those guys in the expansion draft, that I think a team goes after, because I believe that when he's on his game and if he's paired up with the right guy, his physicality, his ability to dominate another forward, an opponent's forward, is significant. But I'm curious to see how the Borchers thing is going to go in Portland. I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon and say, "Yep, now Portland's all defensive issues are all solved now." I'm going to really wait and see on that one.
I think one of the things Portland Timber fans will be excited about with Borchers is just the experience and the knowledge of the league and helping Ridgewell continue to settle and helping Powell develop. And now he has the chance to play in front of probably a new goalkeeper, a Ghanaian international, Adam Larsen-Kwarsi, coming out of Norway. He started the first game of the World Cup against the United States for Ghana and then got dropped for the next two games. A 26-year-old goalkeeper and a new move for them. Donovan Ricketts coming down. Now he's been exposed in the expansion draft for Portland, so that whole back line could be changing for the Timbers. And then you move back out east and the Philadelphia Union. We talked about their trade with the Kugo down to Orlando, but they also pick up CJ Sapong for a first round pick from Sporting Kansas City. And this was a Philly team we have talked about on this show consistently. If they could get that one striker, they could be in the conversation for an MLS Cup run. Is this the player, and where does CJ Sapong fit in, Simon?
I don't think it's CJ Sapong. I think he doesn't solve that at all. CJ Sapong, I'd be interested to see if they give him a run as the central forward. I think in those early years in Kansas City, I was frustrated personally that Sapong didn't get enough time as the central striker, that he was always one of those wingers. And I thought he caused more havoc because he can hold off defenders. He can hold on to the ball, get other people involved, and just be a pest. I thought he might be better at central. So we'll see if he gets that chance here. I'm just not impressed with the overall attitude I've seen on the field from him. His just general disposition on the field just doesn't impress me. I don't know if there's physical issues that he's battled maybe in the last couple of years that have led to that, but I feel like I've seen a lot of sulking and just not the same energy, not the same determination, not the same guy out to prove himself that we saw in the first year. So, you know, if I'm a Philly guy, a fan, you know, again, this is another wait and see move.
And for Sapong, maybe for him, it's just a chance of getting another shot, getting a fresh start. We know that Andrew Wenger came into Philly off of, you know, some struggling times in Montreal and had a very good season last season. And for all of your trade coverage, go to MLSsoccer.com. There's the trade tracker up, and it'll help you stay on track with everything that's going on. So many trades coming down today. We don't have the time to go over it all, and that's because some other big news broke at the end of the day.
And David, just to be clear, the half-day window was open on Monday, so teams could kind of get their houses in order before the expansion draft and have players that they want to have on the roster and get rid of others and just make the necessary moves in anticipation of the expansion draft. But we glossed over the acquisition by the Timbers of the goalkeeper, and another team acquired a goalkeeper on this day, Joe Willis arriving in Houston from D.C. In my opinion, I've been a Joe Willis fan for a long time. He is a starter. I think he goes to Houston and he's the starter. But when you see a team go out to Norway to get a goalkeeper, and then you see a guy like Joe Willis who's been on the bench for a couple of years now, and now he finally gets the opportunity. And it's just interesting to see the philosophy of teams. I still am amazed that in the United States, we have teams using international spots on goalkeepers. I just don't understand it, frankly.
We actually got a tweet about that, about why. And it seems like MLS teams go out and they get talented goalkeepers, and it kind of doesn't seem to make sense why they're going out and spending all that time scouting, recruiting for that when they have the opportunity with so many talented American goalkeepers. But you mentioned the expansion list, and let's get to that, Simon. There's a lot going on this week. Wednesday is the expansion draft, and every team had the opportunity to protect 11 players. Homegrown players, Generation Adidas players, were automatically protected, so they didn't have to be on either list. And then we get a chance to see the unprotected list, and we get a chance to see who Orlando City and New York City have the chance to pick up in this expansion draft. Simon, let's start from the top. Talk about a few of the players. Who are a few of the top players that stick out to you?
Well, it depends how you're looking at this. If you're looking for starters, I think there are several here. And when you think about it, we're only talking about 20 players of 240 that are going to be picked here, because each of the two teams, New York City and Orlando, they have 10 picks each. So I think they're going to come away with fantastic players. When we look at just starters, I mean, when you have a guy like Corey Ash at left back, Chris Wingard at left back, those have got to be up there because left backs are hard to come by. Although you see New York City already stocking up there on fullbacks. Pam Odukai mentioned as a defender. Ned Grabavoy in midfield, I think, is a valuable commodity. Who knows if maybe a Jason Kreis, he coached him, would go after him. Lewis Neal in D.C. intrigues me. Jackson from Toronto, he's a proven winger, always causes issues. Danny Cruz, I think, is a guy who, even if he's not your regular starter, is maybe someone you want on your roster. But those are the more veteran group. Stephen Keel at center back, along with Pam Odukai. So center back, you can address it there with those two guys. But there are so many young players that I would make sure I get a couple starters if I'm one of these two teams, and then make sure I stock up on talent. I think Philly have two guys that I would snatch immediately. Leo Fernandez and Pedro Ribeiro, for me, those two attackers, they are fascinating players. I think they have a future. Kenny Walker in the holding mid spot, the guy who really can be the conductor of your to set the pace of the team, a little bit like Kyle Beckerman. I like him. He's with the LA Galaxy. We haven't even seen a lot of him. Patrick Mullins, the rookie who we saw played really well at MLS Cup. He's another guy. There are several fullbacks here. When I look at a Mark Bloom, a Dylan Remick, Carlos Salcedo, when we're talking center backs, to me, he's a starting center back. I know there's a little bit of controversy right now with Real Salt Lake, but I believe that Salcedo deserves a chance to start. Michael Azira, a guy who started in the midfield for Seattle. So many guys, I think, here. You don't even have to say you got to take a chance on these guys, because I think they're that talented that I think they can contribute right away. And I'd be shocked if Orlando passes on Brian Brown.
And I think that second list of the guys is the guys that you're really going to see go, the Dylan Remicks and the Chris Korbs, the younger players who you can get production out of. And you have to remember that these two teams already have players in place, so maybe holding midfield, not a position with Andrew Jacobson and Amobi Okugo already in place that these two teams are looking at. But I think Chris Wingert's one for me, a New York City native who's played under Jason Kreis all those years at RSL, that I think he's definitely going to look for. Salcedo as well, you said, and we know he has that issue with RSL, but it wasn't an issue with playing in MLS. He wants to play in this league. He was just having trouble coming to terms there, so maybe a chance for him to move and stay in the league. And then the one thing to think about that we've seen before is taking players that you know other teams will want to come in and trade for you, and a chance to pick up those players and then continue to move and wheel and deal as you build your rosters. One of the ones players you mentioned was Patrick Mullins, who I think is really interesting. But I got to ask you, Simon, one big question, one big name on this list is Eddie Johnson. DC United not protecting him. He had a great year 2 years ago for Seattle, struggled this year on the DP money. Do you take that risk on him?
I think based on what you've seen this year, I don't know how you can feel comfortable with that, to be honest. We know he's at a high salary. We know he's had, you know, some injury knocks here and there. He's not been himself. And I think you wanted to see, if you're one of these two expansion teams, you wanted to see him have continue to ride that wave with DC that he had in Seattle, and you just didn't see it, and I didn't even see a hint of it. Now, that could be the kind of team he was playing for. We've had that debate throughout 2014. Is it just DC? That's the way they play, and so he doesn't show up well in that kind of setup where they're, you know, they're really not serving, giving him a lot of service. I wouldn't pick him. I think these other guys, the younger guys, Leo Fernandez, Ribeiro. We haven't talked about Sebastian Fernandez, who I think played really well for Vancouver. Carl Robinson was counting on him there at the end. I know he has a 4-game suspension to start the year, and I believe he was on loan and there might be a transfer involved. But if you're a team that wants a guy who can really eat up minutes for you, he's another guy. And I just think there's so many other guys out there. Why would you maybe, you know, take a gamble on an Eddie Johnson, who we've seen ups and downs all throughout his career, and if you're an expansion team, you don't have time for that.
And Eddie Johnson playing for DC United. DC United made a couple trades today, moving around some international spots, so make sure to check that out. And this is going to be an exciting week, of course, and a lot of these players that you look at this list and you start to question now their spot on the team, because a player like Rice Mboli, Simon, they moved a lot of pieces around to get him in the team, him and Zach McMath, both available for the Philadelphia Union. Even if they don't get taken, does this tell you a little bit about their standing on their club?
Well, I think Rice Mboli is not a, like, if I'm looking at him, if I'm the Union and I say, let's leave him exposed, I don't believe it's a huge risk that someone's going to take him. First off, based on some of the moves already made at goalkeeper by both the teams, and taking salary considerations into consideration, the fact that he's a DP, and I think these two teams are being very measured with how they approach their DPs, and they want to, obviously, I don't see NYCFC blowing a DP spot on Rice Mboli. And you don't, you know, when Orlando has Tally Hall, you don't see them needing Rice Mboli. So when you look at it that way, it's a low risk. So I wouldn't know to say for sure that that is necessarily a statement about their feeling about Rice Mboli. It is interesting that if you look at their protected players, I don't know that you can argue with many of them, but there is an Ethan White in there. Who's protected.
Who Jim Curtin showed that he really liked down the stretch at center back.
And I really like him. I'm really shocked he hasn't gotten more time. So, but again, so you allow Rayson Bolden to be unprotected. I don't think anyone's taking him, though.
And so remind you on these rules, if one player gets taken from your list, you're now allowed to put another player on your protected list, and every team can only lose two players max in this draft. So in a situation where a Rayson Bolden was picked, Philly would have the opportunity to move Zach McMath into their protected list at that point if that's what they chose to do. And that's all going to happen on Wednesday. And coming up next, we're going to jump into the mailbag, see what you guys thought about all of these moves, about what your teams are doing, your questions and comments here on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 94.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Bobby Shuttleworth with the New England Revolution, and you're watching or you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back here on Extra Time Radio in New York City, I'm David Goss, joined alongside Simon Borg. And Simon, last night I know you were traveling back from MLS Cup, tired, carrying the whole MLS team on your back, but I was at home watching a little bit of television, something I know that you will like. It was called Eaten Alive. There was a man who traveled down to the floating forest in the heart of the Amazon because he built a special suit and wanted to be eaten alive by an anaconda. And people were upset. People were upset a week ago because they thought that it was an animal rights crisis. And people were upset yesterday because in the end, sorry if I'm spoiling this for you, he didn't actually get eaten.
That is fascinating to me. I did see the commercial, the spot promoting it, and I thought it was fantastic. But he asked out of it?
Yeah, so in the end, he built a special suit. And the anaconda, it coils around you and uses its muscles to take the life out of you, let's just say. And then it begins to eat you, and he wanted to then be eaten. And in the end, the anaconda would have regurgitated him because he's too big for the anaconda, which had to be 25 feet to be able to fit a person. But in the end, as the coiling was happening, one of his arms, he lost the feeling in it, and he asked out. He tapped out because they were in a zoo setting, and all of his friends came in and pulled the anaconda off, which actually, surprisingly, wasn't as hard as you'd think it would be. And so in the end, he doesn't actually get eaten, and people were pretty upset.
So ultimately, the guy's a fraud. And look, it's telling to me that you watched the show and you didn't even know the guy's name. He doesn't deserve that his name is remembered, because what did he expect? The thing is going to try to make sure you're lifeless and then consume you. And how did he think it was going to go? And if he was in the anaconda, so he was banking on getting regurgitated.
It
sounds like a good tease material, but I would absolutely be frustrated. I agree with everyone else who's frustrated. And by the way, sorry for the spoiler alert for anyone who recorded that.
But for anyone who wants to watch any more, and for Simon, I know you love this type of thing, it's Man Up Week on Discovery Channel, so check out your TV guides for that and any more anaconda feedings with humans. But let's jump back to MLS. And one of the players we didn't talk about when talking about the expansion draft, who of course is extremely attractive, is Diego Fagundes, who the New England Revolution left unprotected. But Brian Bolello tweeting out here that we executed a trade with Orlando and NYCFC, which will result in Diego not being taken in the expansion draft. He'll be with the New England Revolution next year. So that takes him off the board, Simon. And I think that makes a lot of New England Revolution fans happy. Of course, what doesn't make them happy is the result that happened yesterday on Sunday, losing in the MLS Cup 2-1 to the LA Galaxy. And Simon, not a scoreline that surprises you. We get a tweet from Francisco Perez who says, Simon Borg, the Oracle of Queens. Apparently, you called it on the spot, 2-1 in overtime.
I got lucky this time. And look, I'm not one to pat my – I know you guys think I pat myself on the back when I get things right, which I normally do. But no, but just to be clear, that was not a question submitted by Francisco Perez. It was a statement.
Okay. So let's get back to the questions. Bob and Kathy Berger tweet at us, and I know this one will interest you. Over under on LD being a similar size to the original Ronaldo in 18 months.
First off, let's not bypass the crying, Landon, which we didn't see tears. I didn't think – did we see tears on the weekend?
I didn't personally in the viewing that I saw, but I wasn't there and I didn't get as much footage.
He did not cry. But when it comes to the waistline, I think 18 months is too aggressive. I think he'll need 2-3 years to get there. But part of me wonders, look, we saw him kind of, he looked like he had a few pounds on earlier in the year, and the jersey was looking tighter on him than usual. So I'm not sure he has the metabolism where everything gets burned. I think he's very capable of putting on a few pounds. And he seemed in the postgame press conference, he was relishing the fact that he wasn't going to train anymore. So I don't know how much he's going to keep in shape. And I wonder, though, if he, in the back of his mind, is wondering, you know, people expect me to get fat. Let me make sure I don't. So it's to me, it's going to be fascinating. I'm going to watch every appearance I can of Landon Donovan to see what's going on there, because I think it's possible.
All right. Well, we'll have to see how that one goes. I think a lot of people less interested than you are. But, Simon, you'll keep us up to date on that. A question coming in here from at Govo Sprodling, Greg Sprodling on Twitter, and he says, can you explain it? Please explain future considerations on the podcast, future considerations, a lot of what the trades that went down on Monday had going in one direction. Simon, what does that mean?
Essentially, the two teams, they have general agreement on a deal, and maybe there's just a little bit that they, you know, to sway the deal either way. It's just minor details. It's just dotting of the I's, and they do that with, you know, an exchange of maybe, you know, an insignificant amount of cash or a draft pick or something that we never even hear about after the future considerations usually mean nothing. They exist in other sports and they're never a big deal.
All right. So the expansion draft coming up on Wednesday. Go to MLSsoccer.com for all your coverage of that, as well as the aftermath from MLS Cup. All that information on MLSsoccer.com. And we'll be back after the expansion draft to cover it and talk about all the moves that occur on Wednesday and beyond. For Simon Borg, for Nick Furshaw, Matt Doyle, and Andrew Wiebe out in California. For me, David Goss, thanks so much for listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XM FC Channel 94.